You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program by the Ecological Society of America, where we interview scientists involved with public policy. Today, I'm interviewing Emmalyn Resiteritz with the University of Texas at Austin. Emmalyn is one of this year's Graduate Student Policy Award winners. Through the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, you've also conducted research into the ecology of harmful algal blooms. Could you talk about your collaborations with local governments on this issue and how this research benefits society?
Yeah, so I did an NSF REU at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute working with Dr. Donald Anderson. And I didn't specifically work with government agencies, but what he does, which I think is really important and amazing, so he works on monitoring harmful algal blooms in the Gulf of Maine. And the Gulf of Maine is a really great fisheries industry. So what he's been able to do is to collaborate with local fisheries and local governments to give them early warning signs of when there's these toxic blooms that then bioaccumulate in the shellfish that these fisheries are trying to acquire. So that allows the fisheries to not waste their time going out when they're going to collect toxic shellfish, so they don't collect things they can't sell, and so they don't have to worry about whether or not it's safe or not to sell to the public. And so this has been a great collaboration, really benefiting researchers and the local fishery people, and then also the government. So it's been a good collaboration that I think should be expanded elsewhere.
During your meetings on Capitol Hill this past spring, you discussed your work with the City of Austin Watershed Department to assess biodiversity and the potential for future biological invasions. Could you discuss how you got involved with the Austin Watershed Department and the specific invasive species threat to that region?
Yeah, so I started volunteering just off and on, doing some kind of cleanup days with the Shoal Creek watershed. And the main thing that we were kind of doing was removing a giant cane, because the giant cane, it's an invasive species, and it grows rapidly, and it has these tubers that kind of spread out underneath the ground. So it's very hard to get rid of, and it spreads really quickly and keeps coming back. It's hard to destroy. So I started being interested in looking at what invasive species are there in the park and trying to get some sort of biodiversity survey. And so I talked to them about doing this project, and what we kind of came to realize was different areas of this Shoal Creek Park had actually, these biodiversity surveys had already been done, and there'd been a lot of citizen scientists who had marked invasive species on this invasive species website, so we knew locations of invasive species. So there wasn't much for us to do, except they're still trying to monitor and get rid of some of the invasive species, specifically giant cane.
So how exactly does giant cane damage these ecosystems?
So giant cane, they grow really rapidly and really tall into these monoculture stands. And so it's bad because they take up all the nutrients, and they also grow so tall that nothing else can get sunlight, so other things can't grow in. And they become a monoculture, so they don't have any sort of diversity, so they're not a diverse habitat for insects or amphibians or reptiles that would want to live in it. So it really decreases the diversity of the area when you just get these monoculture stands, and they're hard to get rid of.
Going further into the Capitol Hill meetings, when communicating with policymakers on the importance of sustained federal investment in scientific research, what aspects of what you said seemed to resonate the most with the offices you met with?
So I think really trying to put a monetary value on what we're doing, and conservation and research, and how that's actually benefiting society in those states was a really great way to get politicians engaged, saying NSF funding going to your state gave this much money, which provided this many jobs, which created these interesting patents or these interesting ways of solving these problems that saved the state this much money, I think is the way that politicians can actually see the value. So I think it's really good to posit things in that light.
You've now met with several House and Senate offices from the Texas Congressional delegation. How did your overall experience inform or change your perspective of Congress and your concept of policy engagement in general? Was there anything particularly surprising or noteworthy regarding these interactions?
I had some interactions where I was surprised by their disapproval of the National Science Foundation. There seemed to be some officials and some people working in Congress who seemed to not trust NSF and seemed to think that they were withholding information and being very difficult, which I thought was interesting and I didn't expect. Otherwise, besides that, there was also interesting information where I would think that they would know some sort of environmental issue that they had no idea about, which I guess goes to the point of me maybe being in some sort of isolated scientific community. Everybody within it knows, and then I assume that other people know. So it was nice being able to spread the message about toxic blooms and the problems of invasive zebra mussels to a broader audience. For the most part, it was nice talking to the science representative because they kind of understood more what you were saying and maybe had heard of some things and knew of their importance. So I think it's important for Congress to have science advisors, and I wish more of them did.
What's a benefit of talking to an audience that's either less familiar with science or maybe critical of science programs in your view?
Yeah, I think being insular in any discipline is not good. And I think we're strengthened when we really are able to talk to people who disagree with us, take their doubts and try to incorporate it into our research or how we explain ourselves. Because a lot of people's doubts about science or doubts about other things are general doubts that need to be taken into account. And I think it strengthens how we do science when we talk to people who maybe disagree with us.
Finally, what advice would you give to other young scientists seeking to engage in public policy?
I would say volunteering just with local agencies that you think are doing good work. And I also think that just being able to public speak to a general audience about what you do is really important. And if you can do that, that'll really give you a leg up on trying to bridge science and policy. So we at University of Texas at Austin have a graduate student run public lecture series once a month at our field station that's in Austin. And so once a month, there'll be a grad student who gives a public talk about some sort of cool research they're doing or topic. And so last night I gave mine, which was on camouflage, and it was really fun, and it was for a very general audience. And I think being able to engage the general audience of why science is cool and why they should care, I think is a really good skill to learn early.
And that was Emmalyn Resiteritz with the University of Texas at Austin. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time when The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.